Welcome, welcome,
welcome
to Inspo, a podcast dedicated to telling the warts and all story of one Australian startup that is on a mission to bring personalised inspiration to 1 billion people. We will also be interviewing the celebrities, influencers and experts who will be honest, revealing and brutal to ensure that you live the most amazing life. My name is Mark Bowness and this is the Inspo Story. From the age of 11, Jamie had dedicated his life to becoming an athlete. He was disciplined, focused, and was offered a sports scholarship at the University of Illinois. After making a decision to not take that scholarship, he joined a Russian pole vaulting team to pursue his quest to achieve his sporting ambitions. Jamie realised that he wasn't the best in the world at his sport and that being an athlete wasn't financially feasible for him, and so he travelled to Ireland and continued his life of adventure. Jamie trained to become a police officer and a lifeguard and ultimately entered the yachting industry and travelled the world. Jamie worked hard playing his role in keeping the yacht charters running for the world's elite whilst enjoying their helicopters and water toys when he had the chance. Jamie had multiple discussions about being on Below Deck Down Under, but at the right time and in the right place, he became one of the stars of the show. In this episode, Jamie opens up about resilience, creating your own adventures with little money in your account, and the discipline that is required to literally live a life of adventure. We are delighted that Jamie has agreed to feature on Inspo to bring his knowledge and wisdom to our users who both want to get into the yachting industry and to those who are equally passionate about discovering how to live their own life of adventure. So, turn off distractions, focus on this episode, and discover how you can really live a life that truly matters. Let's get straight to it. Jamie, welcome to Inspo, the app and the podcast. How are you?
Good, mate. How are you? I'm excellent.
I'm very well, thank you. Whereabouts in the world are you joining us from today?
I'm currently in West Palm Beach, Florida, just on the east coast of the US.
So is it always a case of being on these beautiful, luxurious yachts and, you know, enjoying the sun? And is it an easy life for you there, Jamie?
It is, but it isn't. You know, working on boats, it's definitely hard work, and you definitely are on your knees, you know, scrubbing the teak like a pirate. But, you know, on the flip side, you get to see some of the most beautiful places in the world. Florida is a pretty nice place. I mean, all these yachts were always in and out of Florida. That's sort of a base or a hub for most of these bigger yachts. And then we sort of travel around the world from here.
I want to go back a little bit and go back to kind of when you were younger, and because I've read a lot online about you, and some of it may or may not be true, but in terms of, it seems like you had a passion to explore life, and I saw things about traveling, and so there's, I'm just going to bring up my notes to get this right, but there was that you trained as a police officer, lifeguard, soldier, that you moved to Colombia to learn Spanish. Firstly, is all this true?
Yeah, you know, most of that is true. Soldier, no, I was never a soldier. I don't know where that one came from. However, I've worked in like paramilitary organizations, but not never a soldier. Obviously, the police force, yes, and that is sort of a paramilitary sort of force in there, over there in Australia. Yes, I did move to Colombia to learn Spanish. I sold all my stuff, and yeah, most of that is true, yes.
But I'm interested in when we go through school and maybe university, that we're kind of conditioned that we need to have a focus for a career and go down a certain life path. You seem to live the life of an adventurer. Where does that come from? Like, were you ever focused on a specific career, or is it just as life happens, I'll experience it?
I think, you know, growing up through high school, like, I was an athlete from around about, well, I started training with a coach from around about 11 years old. And that's where I sort of became and started progressing as an athlete, a track and field athlete in hurdles. And, you know, I won my first Queensland State Championships in 1998. And then every year on until I think I was 16, I broke my back. So I was out for a year. I got silver medal in Australia, you know, in 1998 as well. And then I won the Australian Championships when I was 15. But yeah, I broke my back when I was 16. I was out for a year and then made a comeback in 2017. So I think that structure that I had from being an athlete, and literally I'd go to school and carry two bags. One was my school bag, the other one was my track bag. And I'd catch buses to training and have all this discipline to just be an athlete. And really, by the end of high school, all I wanted to do was just be an athlete. I wanted to go to the Olympics. I wanted to be the best in the world at that sport. And, you know, I ended up changing from that sport. I got a couple of scholarships offers as well throughout the years of, in my teens. You know, I was offered a scholarship to the University of Illinois, actually, when I was 18. And I didn't take it. That's probably, to this day, my biggest regret. And the reason behind that was mostly because I was just 18. My coach was sort of like, she was like, don't do it. The Americans are going to burn you out. And my mother was just like, well, it's your choice. And I didn't go. I mean, I grew up with this coach, so I didn't go. And I regret that big time. But, you know, moving forward from that, not long after that, I left her and went and joined pole vaults. I joined a Russian pole vault squad on the Gold Coast there, and I just loved training. Like, we would train 6 days a week, we'd have a squad behind us, and all I wanted to do was be an athlete. I remember the teachers at school saying to me, Jamie, what do you want to do when you get older, when you finish school? I just want to be an athlete, miss. I just want to be an athlete. And they're like, but what about your backup plan? I was just like, there's no backup plan. Yeah, like, that's all I wanted to do. So I think having that for so long and training as an athlete for so long, I think I just really needed to just press pause for a minute and just go and see what else is out there for me.
So where did that determination come from?
I have no idea. I honestly don't. Like, I feel like I was good at something, which was running. I was never good at soccer. I was never good at AFL. I was never good at many of those team sports. Rugby union, I was good because they just threw me on the wing and they gave me the ball and I just ran fast and scored tries. But same with touch football. So that was the same. But like, I never even really knew the rules. I just ran fast, you know. But I felt like I needed to get into the individual sport where I could focus and work as a team training-wise, but then compete against everyone. And when I figured out I was actually good at something, then I just ran with it, literally. Like, I was just like, give me whatever training I need, whatever information I need, whether it's, you know, on the track, what diets I need to take, what other sports influences I needed to study, you know, books that I needed to read in relation to bibliographies and things like that, and let me immerse myself deeply. And that's where visualization came from as well. You know, I was visualizing that from when I was a boy, you know, long, long time ago, when I was like 13 years old. I was literally visualizing in the shower. And my mother would be banging on the door, Jamie, get out of the shower. What are you bloody doing in there? You know, because I was visualizing my training, my events coming up. So I was heavily immersed in it.
That's amazing. And you know, it's often the case that people, young people, have goals and dreams, but to take it to the level where you're visualizing that happening and becoming a reality and kind of going through the motions before they happen is phenomenal in terms of that mindset. So what, again, interests me then is that you've kind of built your life as, I want to be this athlete. And then at some point you say, I'm going to explore other things. Was there a point where you had to kind of let that go? Everything that you determined, the visualization, the hopes, the dreams, the goals, is there a point where you had to lay that down?
Yeah, you know, it took a long time to figure out that being an athlete wasn't feasible, really, unless you were like literally one of the best in the world, like top 10 in the world in that sport that I was doing, or those two sports I was doing. And I wasn't at that stage, you know. So yes, I had to let it go, but not completely. It took me a long time. I spent thousands of dollars trying to be, you know, the best of the best of the best, and I just wasn't the best of the best. I was the best in the country, I was the best in Queensland, but I wasn't the best in the world. You know, just this whole being an athlete dream, I had to sort of let it pass me a little bit, but I wasn't going to just stop there. I needed to go, and I needed to see what else was out there for me. You know, even when I did join the police, you know, when I left, I literally stopped training at 21, 22, and because I'd spent a lot of money in my pole vault, I really couldn't afford to keep going. I actually couldn't afford to keep going. So that's pretty much the main reason I stopped. I got a one-way ticket to Ireland, moved over to Ireland, lived over there in Galway. As a normal person, I wasn't training. I was just in the gym. I'd ride to the gym in the cold, working behind the bar. I was working in security, and that's all I did, meeting new people in Ireland. And that little taste of adventure and being a normal person, I really liked it, because I wasn't a normal person since I was 11 years old. I was training every day. So it was really, really nice to do that. But then coming back and joining the police that was probably my next biggest accomplishment after athletics.
So it's fascinating, isn't it? Like, just to reflect on that, athletics, people have goals and dreams to become the football player or the AFL player or the singer or the actor. And it's fascinating that we often hear these stories of those that have achieved those big goals and dreams that are our very own dreams. And it's persistency and resilience and commitment and, you know, and all that is true. Like, all that is true. But at some point, we have to decide for ourselves whether this particular path is right for us right now. How would you encourage people or those that are kind of in that situation of, oh, I'm going down a certain path, but is it right? What advice would you give as to how to determine whether that's for you?
I think, you know, it takes a lot of self-reflection. You really need to not just think about it. You really need to write everything down. You need to reflect once a month. I would once a month reflect on what I've achieved in my life, like up until to now. And it's not like you're sitting there for hours on end, but you're thinking about different things and you're writing things down. But it helps you feel good because, you know, you have come so far. I think we forget how far we've come sometimes. And we think because where we are now, we still need to keep pushing and pushing and pushing, which, yeah, we do. But let's take a step back and go and congratulate ourselves for how far we've actually come and what we've actually achieved. I used to put my trophies and my medals and everything on display in my apartment, even as a grown man. And people would come over and they used to love seeing this. But it was more for me to see this and see and remind myself what I've achieved. So the things that, you know, where you get to a point and you really, you're trying to decide whether I should continue to pursue it or not, it's really about reflecting on what you've achieved so far and then doing basically a pros and cons list of expenses, because it's going to come down to money. How much money are you going to earn from it if you continue? Or how much money are you going to lose from it if you continue, you don't achieve the desired outcome? And it's not just about money. Obviously, I used to have this attitude where it's just like, forget money. I'm just going to do it regardless. And trust me, I've done a lot of things with a very little amount of money in my accounts. And I never really wanted money to stop me. My parents never had much money. You know, I was working since I was 14 years old, paying rent since I was 15 years old. You know, mum and dad would struggle to help get me to the national championships and things like that. So I really didn't want money to get in the way. But there is a time where you really have to think, okay, what's more important right now? You know, if you've got a wife or children, or if you want to study something, you know, can you do both? And, you know, a lot of the times I did do both. So it all comes down to really journaling, writing things down and coming back to those things and, you know, not just having just one crazy goal, have another couple of goals, you know, because if you've got one crazy goal and you're not achieving anything for months and years on end, then you're not fulfilling anything. So you need to really achieve something to keep moving forward.
It's so true. And I think motivation is key as well. I kind of reflect on the fact that when I was younger, I was passionate about getting into acting, becoming an actor. And the only reason, Jamie, that I was passionate about that is because I was bullied at school as a kid. And in my mind, I was just proving those idiots wrong. And I remember, like, I went to acting, like local theater and all that kind of stuff, and had a acting teacher. And then I went for an audition at a quite well-known acting school in the UK. And I tell you what, I had this judges or jury in front of me, as it were, you know, almost deciding on whether I should be getting through. And I was trying to drag my way through this kind of audition. It was embarrassing. I felt like an idiot. And it was that point that I realized that my motivation wasn't because I was so passionate about acting, but it was just to prove everybody else wrong, you know? And I think the other thing as well, just from your story that so far, is that it's easy to see the outcomes, right? Whether I become that athlete or whatever that ultimate goal is or not. And we kind of weigh that up. But what I've learned from you so far is that you've learned and grafted and developed so many skills along the way that's clearly set you up for the rest of your life, whether it's going into police and the resilience and determination that you need there. Like, you, that whole process set you up for the rest of your life. Do you see some of the traits that you've built at the beginning, even in your life and work now?
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, this, like, some people, including my close friends and family, just look at me and they talk to me and they're just like, bro, like, Jamie, like, I don't know how you've gotten through that situation, or you've you've had literally less than $1,000 to your name, and you've just flown to another country. Like, they're just like, I would be complete full of anxiety and stressing out, and like, they just don't believe how I've done it, kind of thing. And I feel like it's just, I've, because of all that training, you know, you go through a lot of stress as a teenager. You go through some serious stress, not to mention you got the stresses of high school and whatnot, but stress of training and trying to compete and be the best that you can be, you know, not to mention like the coaches, like you're trying to impress those coaches. They are your motivation as well. They are there day in, day out, rain, hail, or shine. You're on that track and you're training in the gym, you know, whatever you've got to do. That Russian coach that I was training with, I was actually training with Tatiana Grigoryeva. She was one of my training partners, actually. And, you know, that training squad was intense. Like, that was so intense. There was one time where I was 5 minutes late. I was 5 minutes late with one of my training partners to training once on a Sunday morning. We were meant to be there at 8 o'clock. We were there at 8:05. And we went out the night before, which we're not allowed to go out the night before. So we're only young. We're like 19, 20. Anyway, we went out and we were late. Sergey, he literally, because we were 5 minutes late, he screamed at us, made us go and warm up, and then made the whole squad do shuttle runs, which is basically, well, I don't know what they call it here in America, but they're like suicides, I think, just running back and forth from the track, 40-meter sprints at 95% pace and with quick turnaround, so 30-second rest, back again. We didn't stop until all of us threw up, you know, and he made us all spew because of our mistakes. We had hectic stresses, not to mention the danger of the sport and stuff like that. So I think all of these different things, being the training on time, the discipline, the eating right, the getting the, you know, the body percentage fat, you know, to its smaller point, flexibility, you know, gymnastics, weights, all that sort of stuff, and not to mention mindset training. I think the resilience was just built during that time to be able to just, whatever stress or whatever risk is going to come in the future of my life, it doesn't even faze me anymore. Like, I'm extremely risk adverse. Like to the point of, I you know, the next sport that I actually went to, the next sport, which was, I don't know, you know, okay, a sport called skeleton. It's an ice, like bobsled. It's a Winter Olympic sport, but it's head first. Yeah, it's on one sled, one man, head first down the same track as the bobsled. So I literally, after pole vaulting and like literally jumping up 5 meters in the sky, I was like, I can do this too. So long time after I moved to Colombia and Mexico and that, I bought my training pass, and I did this training course, driver training course it was called, for this sport. It was like a week's course. And we were going over 100 kilometers an hour, head first, down and around, getting experiencing 5Gs around these corners, these bends. I've never seen snow in my life. I've never seen snow. That was my first time I saw snow, and I was like 33 years old or something like that. So I'm extremely risk adverse, and I think, yes, it definitely had come down to all the training and stuff that I did as a boy, as a teenager.
That's intense, man. The Superman ride at Movie World in the Gold Coast just stresses me out.
Yeah. Well, this was stressful, and it hurt too. Like, but it was so much fun.
How did you then move into the yachting world?
So after moving to Colombia, I had to leave there after 6 months because of my visa, and then I went to Mexico for a few months. And then I did the skeleton course, and then I had a one-way ticket bought to go over to West Palm Beach to see my mate Billy, who also went to primary school with me on the Gold Coast. And he had been in the yachting industry since he was like 21, 22, and he'd been trying to get me in the industry for a long time. And I'd had other goals, like joining the police and other things like that. So he ended up getting me a gig on a boat, just some day work, they call it, where we go and we help out. Anyway, this boat was going to the Bahamas from Florida, and they're like, would you like to help for a couple of charters? I was like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing, but yeah, let's do it. And we went down, and next minute, here we are doing beach setups and jet skis, and the guests are having fun. We're doing pirate parties and dancing on tables and all this stuff for the guests. Like, I'm like, what the hell is this? So he's like, Jamie, I've been trying to tell you for so long now. And I'm like, yeah, all right, sweet. So I had to do a course in STCW 95 at the time, and a medical course, and then basically you can get that all the way you can basically do those courses within 2 weeks, and then you're pretty much qualified to work on the yacht even with no experience. So then pretty much that was it. Like, I was working on a boat. I traveled to and from Colombia because I sort of based myself out of there. It's like 3 hours from Florida, and you know, you do temporary gigs and you continue to do temporary gigs until you found like a more permanent gig. And when I got this permanent gig on this big boat, it was 87 meters, nearly 90 meters, about 285 feet, 30 crew. When I got that gig, I was in Colombia on the phone to the first officer. And he's like, "So, Jamie, you want to come back to work?" And I was just like, yeah, all right, let's do it. Where are you?" They're in St. Martin. So they flew me to St. Martin. And then that was it. I was on that boat for like nearly 2 years. We traveled all over the world, including crossing the Atlantic Ocean for 2 weeks, you know, all the way to Greece. We went down to Panama through the Panamanian Canal, all around South America, Costa Rica, all the way up to Seattle, Alaska, like, you know, just on this one boat, this one vessel. It was amazing. We're flying in helicopters, taking off from the back of the yacht and then landing on tops of glaciers in Alaska, because the boss would allow us to use his toys when he wasn't there. So it was just, yeah, we got to see some cool things.
I can imagine, again, the kind of resilience that you built early on in your life served you when it comes to that hard work that is required on those yachts. Like, of course, there's everything you've explained is beautiful and the experiences, but it's hard work, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, you're scrubbing teak, like you're literally on your hands and knees in the mix of acid. We call part one, part two, which is acid that you put on this wood to bring out this wood and make it look brand new again, basically. And you've got gloves on, you've got your hat on so there's not flying in your face, you've got glasses on, you've got boots on, knee pads on, you know, you got to protect yourself from this stuff, but you're sweating. And this size boat, we had a crew of 10 deck crew, and this would take us about a week to scrub this whole boat to make it look brand new. But like, not just fatigue, but you've got washdowns, and you know, you're in different countries where you're sweating, like you didn't need to go to the gym, you were so fit, you know. And that's how I sort of, you know, saw it, because if you saw it as labor, you're gonna get sick of it really quickly. So I saw it as like, if I'm washing, like I can wash like this, you know, with the pole and wash the deck heads like that, it's gonna give me a workout and use muscles that you haven't used in a while. So yeah, so you stayed pretty fit on the yacht.
That then goes back to your mindset around how you choose to reframe and perceive things that serves you. That's really inspiring. So how did that lead to Below Deck?
So Below Deck, they reached out to me years ago when I was pretty green to the industry, and they reached out to me. I think someone put my Facebook forward to them or something, and they said, "Would you like to, you know, be on this show?" I didn't know much about it at the time. I knew one of the girls. I had a crush on this girl whose sister was on it, and you know, she told me about it. I was like, "Oh yeah, okay, cool. Well, I don't think I'm qualified enough to be on this show." And I told them this, like the producers or the recruiters, and they were like, "Oh no, that's fine. You know, you'd be suited. You'd be all right. You know, you're just a deckhand. People would be able to tell you what to do and this and that." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, we'll go through the process." You know, they talked me into it. So we went through this process. You had to get psychological checks. You had to get all these checks. Like, it was a big process. I'd say 3 to 6 month process just to get you in the mix there, checking if you're like the right candidate. I had to have interviews with one-on-one plus panel interviews, from afar on Skype and that. And, you know, I was pretty close to getting it, but at the end they just said I wasn't the right fit. And, you know, that's fine. The next time they reached out to me again, when I was on that big boat, where, you know, for 2 years we're traveling around, and I wasn't keen. I wasn't interested, because now I had definitely the experience, but I was on a good crew, a good boat, good program. You know, I was making money, and I really didn't want to do it. I went half-hearted about it. They talked me into it, but I was just like, they're like, "You don't need to do the checks. We've already done them." And I was just like, "Oh, like, you know, we'll go halfway. We'll see what happens." And I didn't get it anyway. So that's good. I was on standby for the Caribbean season, but I would have been a deckhand on that one as well. And that was for the Caribbean and the Med seasons. I think those two were for. So then I'd finished up on that boat, and then I moved back to Colombia for 6 months. And during that time, I was chatting to the pilots on board that boat, the helicopter pilots, and I wanted to really see, you know, I watched them do their job, and it was extremely stressful landing on the back of super yachts in a helicopter. And I was like, I remember one of them, I pulled one of them up on we had a chase boat, a 60-meter chase boat as well, which had all their toys, all the jet skis and helicopters and submarines and all that stuff. So I remember pulling the pilot up and transferring him over to the other boat. And I just sort of pulled him up the back and just sort of just touched the edge. And he was just like, "Whoa, that was a nice, like, doc. You should be a helicopter pilot. I remember him saying that. I was like, really? He's like, yeah, yeah. So I had a chat, you know, one time in the crew mess, and we basically figured out this whole plan of how I could go about it. So I went back to, after leaving that boat, I really needed a rest because we'd been on it through COVID. We were on anchor for 3 months on a boat where we couldn't even leave the boat for 3 months. So I had enough, and it was time for me to go and take some holiday and thinking time. So I went to Colombia, and I was figuring out this helicopter plan, where it was best to do it, whether it was in the US or Australia. Anyway, I figured out the plan. After 6 months, I was flying back to Australia to go and study my helicopter training. So that was the plan. I flew from Colombia to the US and then to Abu Dhabi. I'm sitting in the airport. I get a WhatsApp message from the recruiters of Below Deck again. And I was like, here we go. Hey, Jamie, how are you? I was like, oh, not this again. So, you know, she said, you know, we've got an exciting opportunity for you, and it's not like anyone other before, and this and that. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me more. And they're like, where are you? I said, I'm in Abu Dhabi. I'm heading to Australia to do my helicopter training. She's like, oh my God, this is perfect. Below Deck is going to be filmed for the very first time in Australia. New crew, new captain, new everything. And we want you. So basically, I said, tell me the dates. And I said, I can't do it because that's going to be in the mix of my helicopter training. Anyway, I was able to push my helicopter training back 3 months or forward 3 months. I went through the interview. I had one interview with a panel of people. And the next day they got back to me and said, you're going to be the new bosun on Below Deck Down Under. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, you know, wasn't expecting that. So that's how that came about. I've been in touch with them just for so long that they finally got me on. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say I was ready. I was ready to be on that season.
Again, that's interesting because the amount of times that we try and achieve things in our life, whether it's acting or singing or just a job, a normal career, and we get knockback after knockback. But, you know, I love the way that you kind of progress with it. It's almost like, it seems to be that your attitude was, okay, you know, they're asking again, but why not? Let's just see what happens as a result. And then you just kind of go with it. And it's a no. The no didn't seem to faze you. And then the right position at the right time when everything aligns, yours and for you. How did Below Deck, if it did change your life, how did it, in what ways did it change your life?
Yeah, I mean, Below Deck, it was exciting. Like, it was filming, it was all exciting. The cameras in your face, like, they, you were treated like a superstar when, you know, it was all secret society. Like, oh my God, like, we couldn't tell anyone. Like, a secret for like nearly a year. It was good. You know, I'd never been a bosun before. And I said, I've never been a bosun. And they're like, you know, you're going to be right. You've been a police officer. It's not rocket science. You're going to be able to do this. And, you know, the moment that they told me I was going to be bosun, I literally went to the marina on the Gold Coast, and I was walking around the marinas. I was looking at the boats. I was looking at the lines and how they're set up. I was asked if I could go aboard one boat to one of the crew members there. She's like, yeah, come on board. So I was like, looking at, like, what tenders have you got here? Asking all these questions, just basically preparing. Because as an athlete, if you don't prepare, you're preparing to fail. And that's pretty much as anything. But I had to go in the game knowing what I needed to do. You know, Below Deck was an amazing time being filmed, and, you know, in the way it changed my life, I guess, like, my influence has gone up. I've got a lot of people, I've got a lot of love from people. Like, a lot of people watch everything that I do in stories on Instagram, are inspired. They feel comfortable enough to tell me about some traumatizing things that's happened to them because of some of the things that they saw on the show with me. I told a few things, but, you know, they felt like they felt comfortable. They could share things with me. Also, in a way where people, they see me achieving things and they feel like they want to contribute their goals, sort of like talk about their goals and how they're going to go about it as well. So I feel like people love to share their challenges, their experiences, what they're going to aim for. And I sort of encourage it by putting a few little, you know, motivational things up here and there. I should do it a lot more. Being able to chat to people that, you know, they would never have known who I am, or I would never have, like, I've had messages from this one guy, for example. Like, he got hit by a car and left from the side of the road, and he sent me photos of his face and all this stuff, and how he had a metal plate in his head for like months on end, and he used to like be a triathlete, and now he's like, he'd send me the results of him, like, as he healed, results of him training, and he was watching me in his hospital bed and things like this. To be able to help motivate someone like that, that just makes me feel amazing. No one would have ever known who I was if I wasn't on TV. I'd just be a normal guy walking along the street. But now I'm on, people notice me in the street. People notice me in the shopping centers, at the bars. It's just like, I'm just a normal guy. Like I'm just Jamie. Like, and it's just so weird to people come up, Jamie from Below Deck, like, let's get photos, let's get a drink together. Like, cool. So you're a fan of me? Like, that's awesome. Like, you know. So yeah, it's been good.
Amy, didn't your previous lifeguarding skills come into play on Below Deck?
Yeah, yeah. Like, sometimes half the time I think these guys are setting us up, seriously. But like, no, like, it's just insane how this happened. Like, there was one guy, well, there was a couple of scenes. One scene actually didn't get shown, but there was a couple of scenes. One scene where this guy had got a cramp in his leg, and we didn't know what was wrong, but we asked him if he wanted a life jacket, and he said no. It was kind of swelly, so it wasn't the nicest snorkeling area where we went. He was in there probably for 10 minutes. Next minute, he's just screaming out, help, and he's, you know, I didn't know what was happening at the time. It was pretty far from the boat, and not to mention the reef under the boat was quite shallow, so I had to move the tender to an area and get Culver to take over while I jumped in and grabbed him as quick as I could, basically. So I didn't know what was wrong, though. So as soon as I approached him, I'll straight away the lifeguarding skills are kicking in, talking, you know, calm, slow, it's okay, reassuring them, it's okay, what's happening, are you all right? I've got a cramp, not coming too close to him, because if someone's struggling, especially in the water, they're going to grab you and they're going to pull you down, and you don't want to do that. So you just approach nice and easy. Here's a life jacket. Put the life jacket in front of me. Slide that to him. Just take a hold of the life jacket. You know, everything's going to be okay. And then his breathing started to slow down. You start not panic as much. But as soon as I saw him, his face was white. He was in stress mode, panic mode. And that's when they're ready to grab and, you know, pull people under.
What really inspires me, Jamie, is my sort of takeaway from this conversation is that you kind of live life as an adventure, and you take it full on, you hit it full on, you chase every opportunity. You've learned to not be stressed out by the things that most people will get stressed about, whether it's money, whether it's certainty. And as a result of that, your life has just been this one crazy wild ride, which I think is inspiring for each and every one of us. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, no, it is. Like, you know, when I do those reflections once a month, like, it is literally a roller coaster. Like, I just filled out a visa. I'm filling out a visa form, like, just before this phone call. And it was a US visa, B1, B2. And it was asking me, have you been to any other country other than Australia in the last 5 years? I was just like, geez, I'm just, like, listing, like, typing what I'm thinking, this country and this country. But it's actually a reminder. It's just like, Jamie, you've been to so many countries. I've still got so many to go. But it's just like all these little adventures just happened because I decided to sell all my stuff in Australia in 2017. And this is not, I still feel bad for this, but I left a girlfriend as well at the time and left the country. And I hadn't been back in like 4 years, you know, and all these different experiences, even creating my own podcast just so I could meet new people out while I was traveling around. That's all my podcast was about. Just talking to randoms, like, you know, finding out their story. Just, yeah, there's so many things that I look back and, you know, we have done a lot, and we forget to sort of, you know, be proud of ourselves for what we've done so far.
That's so true. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing your lessons, journey, and insight today. The last question I have for you is, what advice do you feel that people could turn to you on inspo for? What sort of topics and subjects do you feel comfortable sharing info on?
I think, you know, anything in relation to achieving their goals. And I know there's a lot of people out there that can help them in books and, you know, things like that. But I think if someone wants to go, Jamie, I want to achieve this goal, how do I do it? I'd want to sit in front of them if I could. If not, it'll have to be on the computer. But I'd sit there with them and we would go from zero. I would find out where they've been and where they want to go. And then I would try and help fill in that gap in between, basically, by sitting there writing. And we need to pick their brain and get everything written down, not just the goal, but how are we going to do it, the steps of what we're going to do. And then not only having all that written down and pictures and visualization and everything that in front of them, the tools that they need to achieve this goal, but then the accountability is going to be the biggest one. So whether it's a call or a text or something like that every week or something like that, to just go, how are we going? Have you achieved to the next milestone? Where are you? Where are we at? What are you stuck on? What's your roadblock? How can we fix that? But without me telling them how to do it, it's helping them think, write the topic on the top of the page. You know, I'd give them audios like Earl Nightingale, Lead the Field. Like I listened to that over and over and over for years. You know, things like that. That's how and what I'd be able to help people with, I think.
That's really cool. I'm so excited to have you on the platform. And it's easy to see people as reality TV stars, so to speak, without knowing their story and their background and everything they've been through. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. And I can't wait to have you on Inspo, mate.
Thanks so much, Mark. I really appreciate being on your podcast. And yeah, man, I look forward to it.
Jamie was brought up in an environment that didn't offer many opportunities for him, so he decided to create his own. And as a result, he is living the most inspiring, incredible life. And that was my takeaway from this episode. Feel free to register at getinspo.com to be the first to hear about Inspo when we launch and get access to Jamie's personal knowledge, wisdom, and insights to help you to live your own life of adventure. And I'll see you in the next episode.